In this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, please join us as we continue our Neverwinter Nights Legend series, as we interview the Neverwinter Nights 1 Hall of Fame module creator, Baldur Karen.
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community, by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show!
Hey everyone, I'm Zeus from ZNK Studios and Realms of Trinity.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Paul, a.k.a. Beldicron.
And you're listening to the 139th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, the podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, hey, we got a great interview today with Hall from the Neverwinter Nights 1 Legends community. He's produced a lot of great Neverwinter Nights 1 modules. We're going to go over a lot of his work and talk about his upcoming work on his new Prophet series that's going to be coming out shortly. So, but first, let's get into some of the news here. We got some Neverwinter Nights 1 stuff and Neverwinter Nights 2. Zeus, why don't you get started with Neverwinter Nights 1?
Well, apparently in Neverwinter Nights 1, there is a new model viewer by Alessandro Borges. It's an updated version of the NWN J3D Java Model Loader by Revenar. It was recompiled by Alessandro Borges in order to work with the newer versions of Java 3D, which is required to run the program.
That's pretty cool. That's Neverwinter 2 has a model viewer, but that kind of rounds out the Neverwinter Nights 1 one as well. That's why you can see stuff that's being worked on and whatever. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to see shit.
Yep. And Neverwinter Nights 2, we got a couple new things here. First of all, about the Realms of Trinity, Chapter 5, Artificer of the Deep releases on 5/1/2011. It's the next chapter in the series for our second campaign, and it takes you further into the Underdark on your way to Chedden Assad to stop basically the ripping apart of Toril. So it's definitely one of the largest rollouts that we've done on our persistent world, and I urge everybody who has been a part of the Realms of Trinity for Neverwinter Nights 2 to check it out. We've put some fantastic custom content and some never-before-done mechanics in, so I would really recommend everybody give it a chance and check it out. Spent a lot of time, put a lot of effort into it, and a lot of eyes on it, so definitely check us out. And we have a new module alert. It's called Baltran's Beacon by Beelzebub. It's another one of those early 1980s pencil and paper modules, little small modules that they used to sell, like a little folder style thing, and it's a conversion of that. Here's a little synopsis. A strangely delivered advertisement has led you to a sage named Demetrius. He needs a rare component to complete a desperately needed potion. The journey to retrieve it will take you through a large unexplored swamp to a ruined keep, the former headquarters of a vile cult that once claimed the lives of many innocent youths. Cautiously accepts the mission, but who knows what monsters may lurk in the vast marsh. It's for it's single or multiplayer. Character levels 5 to 7, new players leveled to 6, finished at 8 or 9 or so. And gameplay is it's a hack and slash module. It's more of an action module. And the playtime is about 6 hours. So I took a look at it. It looks fantastic. And, this is like the second one I've noticed, a conversion of one of the old classic pencil and paper TSR modules. It's, they're really cool, and they really give you that old style feeling of some of the older Dungeons and Dragons games and things like that. So definitely check it out as well.
Yeah, if you're feeling a little nostalgic or just want a quick run,
Yeah, especially something like this. It's a hack and slash even. You don't have to get into a real big, deep story or nothing. It's just log in, play it, check it out. It's really cool. So let's get started with the interview with Paul and check it out. Hey, Paul. Hey, thanks for coming on Neverwinter Nights podcast talking about your works. I seen you did a ton of great Neverwinter Nights 1 modules, got a lot of votes and Hall of Fames, and you really appreciate you coming on talking about your work.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. My pleasure.
Hey, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the Neverwinter Nights 1 module development scene?
Well, I kind of stumbled onto it. I mean, I, like a lot of people, got Neverwinter Nights, played through the major, the official campaign, and then just started playing around with the tool set. And, you know, the tool set for Neverwinter Nights is pretty easy. So you can really get into and start building a module pretty fast. And so I just tried it and liked it and decided to make a module based on some stories that have been kicking around my head since I was a kid, really. And, that was the start of it. And I just enjoyed it, you know, because it's so, creative. You can really write a whole story, paint areas, and have characters come in. It's sort of like writing a book, but much more, I think, a lot more flexible. So I got hooked on it. It became a hobby.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely in a lot of ways, the Neverwinter Nights engine is definitely a way to, it's a storytelling machine. You know, you can tell any kind of story you want to pretty much with how flexible it is.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and you play a bunch of other people's modules, and you see other ideas. For a while, what I was doing was playing other people's modules and just kind of getting inspired along the way by what they've done and seeing what the tool set and, you know, just kind of cool ideas that a lot of people have had. It just seemed like it's endless, you know, the possibilities.
What can you tell us about the background on the Prophet series you're working on?
Well, that's actually changed over a long period of time, because when I was playing Baldur's Gate, which probably everybody has heard of.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great game. I was thinking of, well, you know, if I were to make an ending to Baldur's Gate, here's what I would do. And I had all kinds of ideas and sort of came up, you know, someday it'd be really cool to do a different ending. And so when Neverwinter Nights came along, I started thinking to myself that, well, it'd be really great to use this engine to make this kind of alternative Baldur's Gate ending. But then, you know, after a while I realized, you know, that'd be kind of ridiculous to write an alternative ending to somebody else's story. That's kind of inappropriate, maybe. And so I just dumped that. But some of the ideas that I had actually made it into the Prophet series. You know, you can't see it anymore, I think, in the story. But a lot of the ideas, some of the basic plot structure actually came being inspired by ideas about where Baldur's Gate could go if somebody decided to sort of resolve it differently. And then really other two modules that I made, Cave of Songs and Honor Among Thieves, were almost like practice modules. Like, one was, let's just play around the tool set, learn about a little bit of what the tool set is like. And the other one was really try to make something non-linear and complicated. But both were kind of like practicing for how to make a module. And the story has been really developing in the back of my head for a very long time. And it kind of took a life of its own. So by the time that it's done, it's really totally different from what I had expected. A couple of themes have remained the same. Okay, well, the story is it centers around, it's really designed to be a multiplayer game. Fortunately, not so many people are playing multiplayer anymore, but it also works as a single player. It works fine as a single player. So the basic idea is that one of the characters has the ability to see the future through dreams. And the whole thing begins with this one dream that person has, which is kind of foreboding and a bit disturbing. And so that person then tries to ask some people around in the town that they're taking a break in, essentially. And they're just asking around to find out what this might mean. And this leads them to go to a nearby town, that they saw being destroyed, being massacred. And they go, but everything's fine. Everything's fine in that town. And so it seems like maybe it was just a dream. But then, of course, later, as you might imagine, this is not really a big spoiler, but as you might imagine, the town does get destroyed. And so the person realized that they did see something in their dream that spoke about the future. And they're trying to understand why. And then in this search for this, for the reason for this, just takes them on a very long, bizarre adventure. And so throughout the adventure, that one character occasionally has dreams. So every time you rest, well, not every time, of course. There's not that many of them. But very often when you rest, you have a cutscene where you see some visions of things that will happen. And meanwhile, the other players will see the character resting and occasionally mumbling something in their sleep. So they get some idea of what the visions are, but they don't have that much information. So it's that one person with the visions who can decide how much he lets the other players know about what he or she is seeing. And then, of course, the visions are hard to interpret. And so it's very hard to know what they mean, and how to prevent them or deal with them properly. So there's a really, it's kind of like a gradually unfolding mystery as to what is really going on. What do all these visions mean? And one of the questions that the player is faced with is why him? Why are they having those visions specifically? What is it about them that makes them special? And of course, that all gets resolved through the series. But it's a very lengthy series of probably about 60 hours of playing time, I would guess. Although it's hard for me to.
Holy crap!
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah,
it's,
I'll say.
That's a great way. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but that's just a nice unique idea that you put in there, where one player experiences the game completely different from everyone else.
Well, in a sense, it's kind of a downer for the other players because they miss out on a little bit of it. You know, they don't see the dreams, and they don't, you know, they're not special. You know, there's one character is special, but I think with a good role playing group, that can be really good because the other players can discuss the dreams and they can discuss among themselves. You know, should they really be following this person? Should they really be letting them try to figure out these dreams? And I played this with a group that I play tested it with a group that I used to play with a lot in the past. And you know, they really, I was DMing, right? So one of them was the prophet. And you know, they really played it up. I mean, you know, with good creative role players, you can really do a great, the story really can develop, nicely in that way. So in a sense, it's good as a single player because then you experience everything and you're the center of the story. But as multiplayer, I think it actually would work better because of that mystery, that extra mystery and a lot of potential interactions in the party. Complicated. Depends on the players.
Yeah, that's got a ton of depth to it. I mean, you know, we were, like you said too, about being a downer for our players. I think anytime you get involved where you're creating stuff that's outside the box and it's actually extremely creative and in a way to make players experience something different, you know, there's always a quote downside to it, but you know, the way you did it despite that is just fantastic. I mean, if you look at that, I don't think you really see that too much, and I can't think of anything really that I've seen in the community that takes that kind of a, you know, that air to it. That's fantastic.
Well, hey, if anybody wants to take that idea and do something with it, go for it. I mean, I think it would be, you know, I think it's pretty easy to do this kind of gimmick, essentially, to make, to create some role-playing opportunities. So, hey, I'm not, you know, I would encourage somebody else to take this general approach, you know, even if the story's totally wrong.
Yeah, definitely unique experience. No doubt about that. I like that a lot. How would you classify your modules? Heavy action, story centric, or what do you think?
Definitely story centric. I mean, I think the action is pretty light. In fact, I would say pretty easy. I tend to, you know, the major complaint I get about my modules is that the combat and the action or such is a bit too light. And sometimes I try to make it a bit heavier, but, for me, it's the story that's always the whole point. I don't really spend a lot of time making really clever and novel action elements. Like there's a lot of module where there's you know sort of custom interactions, custom feats and things that players can do in a way they can combine tactics, and I love that, but I myself don't really do that very well. For me, it's really the story. It's you know, sometimes a bit linear, at least in this module. In Honor Among Thieves, it was extremely non-linear, but this one is quite linear, and so it's a little bit like reading a book, except that there's choices along the way that actually matter. And then the action, and there's really just a couple of heavy action sequences in the whole series. Most of it's really light, a little bit of, you know, filler encounters and things like that, but a lot of conversation, a lot of reading of, you know, notes and tomes and things like that. Wow, so really very story centric.
That's really cool. There's a user question just came in while we're on a topic from Bubba Thud. He asked he'd like to know if there were any books or films, if any, that helped inspire this Prophet series.
Oh, tons, man, tons. I mean, a number of people have noticed the similarities to the Dune series and other stuff by Frank Herbert. Definitely that, in a big way. And like I said, Baldur's Gate, very much so as well. Some of the themes from that. other books, well, Lord of the Rings, I think we all have to credit Tolkien
for
the world, right? So, I mean, because it's totally Tolkien-esque. And other than that, I guess a number of different stories. There was the movie, the one about the guy that doesn't have any long-term memory. Brilliant, brilliant movie. Memento. So there's a little bit of the structure of the story is inspired by the idea behind Memento. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
But I've never seen it.
Neither have I.
Oh, okay. It's a really brilliant movie. I highly recommend it. It's about this guy that doesn't have any long-term memory, so he doesn't remember anything that happens to him. And in order to let the viewer experience what his life is like, the movie actually progresses backwards through the story. So you see the end of the story, the last events in the story first, and you don't know what led to them. Then you go back a scene, and you see the events that just led up to that scene. You still don't know why this is happening, just like the protagonist. He doesn't know why this is happening. And so the whole thing is actually backwards. And when you get to the beginning, then you actually understand what was going on, and you appreciate how crippled and lost this person was because he didn't have his memory. And of course, it's an interesting story on its own, but just the structure of it was really brilliant. So a little bit of The Prophet is based on that because there's a little bit of a backwardness in the way some of your visions work. Very much, very often, and this is a minor spoiler, but very often your visions are actually portraying events in an inverse order. And of course, it's hard to expect that. You don't know when it's inverse or forward, and so it's quite confusing. But I thought that was really interesting in that movie, and so that was definitely one inspiration. And then other inspirations, I don't know what they would be, but there's probably a lot from movies and books that I've read.
So I remember you saying it'd take about 60 hours to complete the series.
Well, I really don't know. If I play myself, it's impossible for me to gauge how long one thing will take or another. I've had a number of playtesters play through, but they also found it hard to just say exactly how many hours. That's just what I'm guessing. Maybe not quite 60, but something like 40 to 60. It depends on how much you stop, really. There's not so many side quests, but of course people can, there's a bunch of different side stories that people can skip entirely while falling on the main one. But also it matters on how much you stop and sort of go slowly. Because you could finish the whole thing probably in 15 hours or something. But I think that would be only if you kind of already played it or you were the person who made it. So then it's easy because you know exactly where to go.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it is hard to tell something like that because you don't have really any solid empirical evidence unless you actually take a group of people through. And even then, you wrote it, so it's a little hard to gauge,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, when we DM'd it, when I DM'd the first chapter with a group, it was actually an incomplete version. It's not what's after. The first chapter is probably the biggest one. It took us forever to get through it. But that's because, you know, some sessions we were just sitting there talking, essentially. And because this was a very heavy role play group, so it really took months to go through it, playing once a week. So, yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I would be actually curious if people would tell me how long the module series is.
Well, there's something. There's a little action item for the.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, go to the IGN vault after you download the module and report to us how long it takes to finish it.
There we go.
There you go. Simple as that. What custom content did you use in creating your module? Did you use the CEP or the Project Q or anything else that you think was noteworthy?
Well, I use CEP a lot, and it's actually a little bit inconsistent because the first two use CEP 1, and then so the prologue and chapter 1 use CEP 1, and then chapter 2 and 3 will use CEP 2. But I'm going to revise that. I'm going to re-release Prologue and Chapter 1 so that they all use CEP2, so it's a little bit more standardized. We'll get to that when the last chapter's done. I didn't use Project Q. I looked at it and it looks great, but I thought, you know, this thing is really big already. And there's a number of tile sets that I also have. So I have a bunch of hacks that add a number of custom tile sets, which are just fantastic. One that I used have use of is DLA City Rural tile set. It's this really extremely versatile tile set for outdoor, which is just fantastic. It's a bit tricky to use, but I really, really like it. The other one was a version of the Mountains tile set that was actually originally created by Adam Miller and then modified by a number of people. And I've got a version of it which is a little bit unusual, that I downloaded just, I don't know how many years ago, from the Vault, which is just, I think, spectacular. It's got it's such beautiful possibilities for shaping outdoor, like mountainous terrains, and there's a possibility for making sort of treetop cities, which I use to make sort of like an elven city. And that's a really amazing tile set. It's got bugs in it, so players can get stuck in places and things like that. But anybody who's commented has always said that, yeah, it's a bit annoying in places, but it's so worth it because visually it's just incredible. And then for Chapter 2, I discovered the Dwarven Halls tile set on the Vault, which I just thought was... So I used that one in both Chapters 2 and 3. And a couple of other ones as well. In Chapter 3, I used Sixth Thrice has a winter tile set, which is great.
Yep.
Pasili has a great Snowy Mountains tile set, so I used those. There's a couple of other smaller hacks, but those are really the ones that make the... that add the megabytes, those mountainous tile sets, all these... and the Dwarven Halls, etc. And there's a bunch of smaller ones that I've included as well. Some really cool statues. The other thing that I use heavily is Gestalt's cutscene script, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. And that is what I do the cutscenes, all the dream sequences with, and as well as a number of other cutscenes here and there. And that's really, really important because without that, it's hard to do. But he did a great job. Really nice. Yeah, those are the major ones. There's a couple of smaller things. I list them all in the module description files. I credit the other things, but those are the major ones that I really, really... You know, I got to say, you know, to those people that, you know, a lot of the inspiration I find for my story actually comes from, like, looking at custom content. Like, you know, you see a placeable or something that looks like something interesting, and that inspires you to kind of spin a story around it. Same with tile sets. You know, a couple of the tiles themselves seem to suggest. Anyway, so I think that a lot of the inspiration for the stories also comes from the custom content itself, including CEP. So, you know, they deserve some of the credit as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're absolutely right about the inspiration. I mean, I know that, you know, I'm primarily a Neverwinter Nights 2 developer, but, you know, we constantly, you know, we've got the new tile sets that people would develop. RWS Studios did a ton for Neverwinter 2. And, you know, you're right. It does kind of give you the ideas or inspirations on how you're going to portray the thoughts that you have and what you're able to do.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it would be actually kind of hard to do it all again with a different set of custom content because, you know, it wouldn't necessarily capture the same things.
So a lot of people have downloaded and played your modules, including myself. Do you get a lot of feedback from the community or not so much?
Well, not so much as I used to. I mean, in the past, when there was a lot of players out there, there was a lot of feedback. So every day there would be comments made. Now, not as much. I mean, there's comments on the websites, on the Vault websites, and occasionally I get emails, but not really. I don't really get flooded by it. But the feedback that I do get is great. I mean, for one, a lot of positive feedback from people who enjoyed it, which is wonderful. And then occasionally people who need help because there's lingering bugs here and there, and things don't always work the same for everybody, or it's just confusing. So that's there as well, and it's actually very valuable, especially in the early days of Neverwinter Nights. It was such a vibrant community. It was almost overwhelming. Now it's a lot easier to keep up with it. Yeah, I mean, I think the feedback has been great, very supportive and very encouraging. And I'm glad that people like it because, you know, I enjoy writing these things, but it's also good to know that people enjoy playing them.
Well, has any of the feedback actually had you change your mind about anything?
Oh yeah, definitely. There was for the first chapter of the Prophet series, there was a bit of a discussion that started on the website for it, which it made me realize that these are some great ideas. There was a player named Armin who essentially laid out a bunch of different ways of interpreting the story, and I incorporate them into the next version. More recently, my feedback's been from playtesters. So there's been a couple of playtesters that gave me a lot of feedback, in particular Randallish, who is actually playtesting Prophet 3 right now. He's given me an enormous set of ideas, and in particular, for the chapter 2, he suggested a different way to write the end part of the story, and I totally changed it. I really liked his idea better of how the story should sort of evolve at the end of that second chapter, and I like it much better. You know, when he replayed it, it was different than what people see on the vault now, just the way events unfold towards the end. So, and a number of the other playtesters as well have suggested, and I list them on the text files. Anyway, so there was a number of suggestions that they made, and right now I have three playtesters play through it, two of whom have started, and they're already giving me ideas. So I'm already working on changing chapter 3 to reflect some of their ideas, and I get that's a lot of feedback, and you know, they're kind of like co-authors to it in a sense, because they give me a way of looking at the story in an interesting way that I haven't thought myself, and very often I actually like their ideas better. So that's definitely great feedback.
Yeah, definitely having a support team like that, plus you being open to ideas, that's awesome. I mean, that gives you the best possible outcome. Like you said, looking at different aspects of what you're thinking yourself, and it opens your mind up to even potentially even more creative aspects to your development.
Well, sometimes you get sort of caught up in a particular idea, and you go a little bit, you know, along that one line, you don't see from the outside how it might really be better in a different way. And so sometimes it's good to have an outside person tell you, hey, well, have you thought of this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, very often it's too much work.
Oh, yeah.
The ideas are like, well, okay, but if I delay for a year, you know. So, you know, sometimes it's just too hard to do it. Like Randallish just suggested something really great to me for Prophet 3, but I don't know. It'll take another year. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of Prophet Chapter 3 coming up, can you tell us a little bit about what you have planned and when it's going to be released?
Well, it's it shouldn't be too long because we're beta testing it now, and it's quite complete in that the main story is done, and I play tested myself a number of times. So the main thing, there's not an enormous amount of bugs. They're mostly minor ones. So I don't think it's going to be that much work. The playtesting will probably take a couple of more weeks, and then it's going to be a couple of more weeks, I think, for me to make changes. The big thing is I just really can't predict, what changes I'm going to want to make. Because if, like I said, you know, some of these ideas are really good, and then I'm tempted to go and spend the time on making them. And frankly, I myself might come up with something that, you know, I'd like to do differently when I've stepped away from it. So it depends on how ambitious I am. And then, of course, it also depends on what my schedule's like, because summertime is, there's more time, but still can be pretty busy. So it also depends on real life. But as far as when to be released, I don't know. Every time I say a date, it's not that date. So I guess I should say tomorrow, and that's wrong. And so you know, there's not going to be no deception. But if I said, you know, if I said July 1st, maybe it won't be July 1st. But I would hope it would be earlier than that. Frankly, I'd hope it'd be earlier. By now, I thought it'd be out. But I just can't predict. Stefan Gagné always had the best answer to this question. He said, "When it's done."
Well, yeah, that you want to make sure you put out a quality product too.
Well, it's partly because. Yeah, I mean, I want it to be pretty good on the way out. Of course, there's going to be issues that I'm going to fix in the first few weeks after release and so on, and I'll probably revamp it a bit, you know, a few months after release. But I want it to be pretty good so that the first few players that go and download it don't get just frustrated with some game-breaking bug or something that just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, with the help of my playtesters, I think we'll polish it enough that it'll be okay. It's just, again, it really depends if I get ambitious, it could be, you know, another couple of months. Hopefully not.
As a whole, where do you see the Neverwinter community going in the future? Do you have any thoughts on that? Or Neverwinter Nights 2, even?
Well, I don't know, actually. I mean, I think that the Neverwinter Nights 1 is what I'm more familiar with. And I think that community, I just can't imagine it lasting forever. I mean, it's gotta shrink simply because there's more and more other things out there that are impressive and interesting. So I don't know. On the other hand, in terms of building, I've tried building with Neverwinter Nights too, and frankly, I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, it's a lot. It's hard.
Yeah, I don't know how we do it either.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. Now, I started doing it just when it first came out, so there wasn't so much, so many tools and custom content and prefabs out there. And so I was, you know, making a bookshelf and putting every book in the bookshelf. I was telling myself, oh my God, this is just going to take me, it's going to take me 3 hours to do one little library. But I think it's a matter of learning curve. I think after a while, you probably just get much faster with it.
Oh, yeah.
But nevertheless, I would say, though, it's much harder building Neverwinter Nights modules. And I think that's evident in just how many there are and how long they are, how big they are. So I don't know. I mean, I think maybe Neverwinter Nights 1 is still the best, the easiest engine and the easiest one to have a community. Like you said when we were talking earlier, that it may actually outlast Neverwinter Nights 2. I don't know much about Dragon Age. I was invited to use it when it was coming out and to beta test a little bit, but I actually, frankly, I never got around to it simply because the learning curve was daunting and I didn't want to devote to it. So I don't know. I think it's going to be replaced because something else will take over. I don't know what that would be. Maybe, you know, maybe BioWare is going to come up with some brilliant engine that is easy to use and a new community, and the community will just move to that. And in which case, I'll probably do it too. I'll probably go to where the community goes.
Yeah, it's definitely, you're right. I mean, we're overdue for something that's, you know, new, that's actually going to be modifiable and still capture the essence of Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, even Dragon Age, it's not Dungeons & Dragons. So, I mean, if you go that route, you're not really staying in the D&D realm either.
And another problem with Dragon Age is that it's only a single-player game, so you're not going to attract any of the multiplayer crowd.
Part of it. I think that's a big part of it. I think that it's too bad that they made that decision. I think, to tell you the truth, the future would be something where the community itself generates revenue for the company that makes the engine, because right now, Neverwinter Nights is, you know, they made it and they sold however many thousands of copies of it. But at this point, how much money is BioWare really making from Neverwinter Nights 1? You know, if they did something where the modules and the custom content are in some way, you know, like the iPhone apps, you know, you pay a dollar or something, and, you know, if 500,000 people buy it, the company makes, you know, I don't know what the percentage breakdown is between the Apple and the app builders, but if BioWare or some other company were to do something where they actually make some money, then I think they will be encouraged to keep the community fed with all kinds of goodies for many, many years. And that, I think, would thrive even longer than Neverwinter Nights has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've often just thought about the same thing exactly. How are they going to continue to make money? And, you know, it's the model is great for us developers, but as far as, you know, keeping a product supported by the original designers of the engine and the actual application itself, it's, you know, it's a little bit difficult to do that and to maintain that level of commitment from them because it's a capital loss at the end.
Yeah, and they gotta make their money somehow, and their people can't be spent keeping up with Neverwinter Nights. Now, on the other hand, the other question is whether the builders could make any profit on it. But I don't think, to tell you the truth, that's even as important, because I think most of the people building, you know, it wouldn't really make that much difference to them whether they make a couple of $100 on it or not, because they're doing it for the enjoyment. I mean, in my case, I'm not sure if I was making it for money, I'd probably derive less pleasure from it because I would be concerned about, you know, making it, you know, the quality control being there and the testing being there. And is it really, you know, when you even if it's a little bit of money, people expect a certain polish. Whereas here it's kind of like relaxed. You can just do, you know, I can do it. If you don't like it, well, you know, too bad, you know, so it's no big deal. And so I can just do whatever it is I feel like.
Yeah, once money gets involved, it's a whole new ball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a level of expectation that's set, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, yeah, if we were doing Realms of Trinity for money, I'd have quit 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't happened.
To some projects, right? That's happened to some projects. And so I think, but the point is, I think BioWare should be able to reap benefits long term from something like this, because they're the ones, or whoever it is, that they're the ones that really set the foundation.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm actually a little bit out of the loop of, you know, when you ask my thoughts on these things. I don't actually have too many, because I haven't really been keeping up with what's new. I was kind of surprised at one point Dragon Age 2 came out. I was like, oh, I didn't hear about that. So I'm a little bit sort of out to lunch when it comes to new stuff, simply because I don't play that much. I do, most of my time is spent building.
Sad, same here. In closing, you know, I wanted to just say one more time, you know, thanks for coming on the podcast, telling us about your work. I mean, stuff that you've created is fantastic, and you know, I've looked over it too, and it's a really great contribution to the Neverwinter Nights 1 community, and the players really gain a lot from contributors like yourself. And you know, just being able to hear you in this venue, you know, to be able to talk about how you come about doing these things and why you do it, I think it's fantastic.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I could say the same about you.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. At the end of the day, I mean, that's what's driving the engine. That's what's driving the application, and it will be around for a lot longer because of people's contributions, as yourselves and other people. I mean, this series that you're being a part of now is called the Neverwinter Nights Legend Series that we put together to go over, you know, people that have contributed greatly to the Neverwinter Nights 1 community. There's a huge list of people out there that do, and that's why it is.
Yeah, and we're building on their shoulders. Like I said, you know, these tile sets that I use, or Gestalt's scripting thing, you know, it's like you use the stuff that other people put out there to do your own thing. So, yeah, that's really I think, the best part about it.
Yep. Well, you get the closing line.
Oh, I get the closing line.
Yeah, you got the closing line.
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.